Tomorrow.
This is Allison.
This is Beverly.
Welcome back to Shaky Understanding. This week, we are going back to comedy.
Yay!
With Much Ado About Nothing.
I love me some comedy. I love me some tragedy, too, I gotta say. Only in play form. So let's get right into it. Let's do some Shakespeare Abridged.
Hit it.
We find ourselves in Leonardo's villa in a town called Messina. And he has a daughter named Hero, who is kind and virtuous and very beautiful. And he has a niece named Beatrice, who is shrewd of tongue, but very funny, and everyone generally likes her. But she's not quite the wifey type. Whereas Hero is very much this perfect goddess of, like, virtuous woman. We get news that the prince is coming to visit with some of his soldiers after ending an uprising by his brother. Leonardo and the prince are really good friends, and he's really excited to have him there. The prince, Don Pedro, comes into town with his soldiers, some of which are Claudio and Benedict. Now, Claudio takes a liking to Hero and thinks that he wants to marry her, as is done in the days. You just kind of like someone, and then you're like, yeah, let's get married. And Benedict has this whole thing where he's against marriage of all sorts and thinks that he and the prince and Claudio and all men that are wise should live bachelors for their whole life. Now, Benedict and Beatrice have this sort of rapport with each other. They know each other from before, and they have this little, like, fight thing going on. But Leonardo's really happy to have his friend Don Pedro here. And then we meet Don John, who is Don Pedro's brother. And we learn that his uprising has just been overthrown and he's made amends with his brother. But we learn pretty soon into the play that Don John is not happy, is looking to just ruin everyone's happiness in general, and is mad that everyone loves his brother. So Claudio reveals that he loves Hero to the prince and to Benedict. Benedict tells him, you're an idiot for falling in love. The prince says, that's a great match. I'll woo Hero in your name for this party we're gonna have later where everyone's gonna be wearing masks. I'll pretend to be you. I'll woo her for you. We'll ask her dad if he will give you her hand in marriage, and it'll be great. And Claudio's like, thank you so much. Let's do this. And at the party, he does just that. But Claudio is misled by Don John and his cronies that the prince woos for himself and that the prince wants to marry Hero. Meanwhile, Beatrice totally annihilates Benedict and makes him a fool to someone she thinks is not him because he's in a mask. And he's like, what do you think of that Benedict guy? And she's like, oh, he's dumb, basically, for a good 10 minutes. So he's all mad at her. So the next day after the party, Claudio comes in very jealous, very angry, and they clear up all the confusion, and the prince says, no, I wooed Hero for you, Claudio. Everything's gonna be okay. And then he's totally happy, and he's super excited to be getting married to Hero. Meanwhile, Beatrice and Benedict are railing against each other, and they end up leaving, and Leonardo, the prince, Claudio, and Hero decide that while waiting for Claudio and Hero's wedding, which will be a week later, to pass the time, they're going to try and set up Benedict and Beatrice by saying that the other loves the other one. So that Beatrice is in love with Benedict, and they're going to tell Benedict, but she doesn't want to tell him, and that Benedict's in love with Beatrice, but she doesn't want to tell her. So they do all these crazy things. Benedict is hiding, and the prince and Claudio talk of how Beatrice is so in love with him. And then Beatrice is hiding, and Hero and her handmaiden are all talking about, oh, Benedict is so in love with her. And so they both start to believe the other's in love with them. And they have these beautiful monologues of, oh my god, maybe I do love them. And they start to discover their own love. Then Don John and his cronies hatch a plan to pretend to be Hero, the virtuous maid who's going to marry Claudio. They're going to get Hero's maid to pretend to be Hero, stand at the window as if she is not as virtuous as she seems, that she is having an affair with one of the cronies of Don John. But it's all made up. Hero is indeed virtuous and a virgin still. So they end up pulling this off. Claudio and the prince, led by Don John, to see and witness this all happening from a window, end up believing that Hiro has been cheating on Claudio and that she's not a virgin, which is really important in this day and age. And so at the wedding, Claudio completely shames Hiro in front of everyone. Instead of just coming up and saying, hey, is this true? He just says, she's a stale, she's a whore, and I would never marry her. And Hiro faints, and everyone thinks, oh, maybe she's dying. And almost everyone leaves except the priest and Leonardo and the whole family and Beatrice and Benedict. And Hiro says, it's not true. I don't know why they would think this. Benedict suspects that it's Don John that's led them down the wrong path. But the priest suggests, pretend that Hiro died. Shame the two men once you find out if it's true or not. And have them repent for shaming her so terribly. It's quickly revealed that Don John has fled the country because he got away with his thing and doesn't want to get in trouble if people figure it out. After Claudio shames Hiro at the wedding, Beatrice is so beside herself. She ends up in a room with Benedict, and they end up confessing that they love each other. And it's the only thing that brings her out of her tears for this horrible thing that's happened to her cousin. And what happens next is he asks her, is there anything he can do to help? Because he's so upset seeing her so upset. And she says, yeah, you can kill Claudio. He's like, well, what about something else? Because he's kind of my best friend and he's a good guy. And I think he's just being misled. And she's like, no, you either kill Claudio or you don't love me. And he's convinced to challenge Claudio to a fight to the death. So he goes and Claudio's like, oh, stop joking. You're so funny. And he's like, no, seriously, you killed an innocent woman because he's in on the gag that Hiro is dead, but he knows that she's not dead. You've killed an innocent woman, and now you have to pay for that. Come fight me in a duel later. And Claudio's like, oh, okay. There's a great example of a fool named Dogberry who has this band of misfit toys, so to speak, who are the police force of this villa. And they end up capturing Conrad and Balthazar, who are Don John's cronies, as they're confessing to each other the thing that they've done, that they've tricked Claudio into believing that Hiro was no longer a virgin. And so they have a direct confession of Don John's crime, and therefore Claudio and the prince feel terrible. They think they've killed Hiro, and she was innocent the whole time. So Leonardo says, to make up for that, you must go mourn my daughter at her temple and write her a nice note. And you can come and marry my other niece, not Beatrice, but I have this other niece that no one's heard of before that looks just like Hiro. So they do all the things he asks. They have a wedding the next day. Claudio comes, tail tucked between his legs, ready to marry whoever this niece is. All the ladies of the house are masked and, like, set out in array. And he's like, which one's my bride? And he unmasks her. And we know it's the original Hiro. And he's like, what? This looks just like Hiro. And they're like, yup, it does. But old Hiro, the one who died slandered, is dead. This is new Hiro. And trust us, she's virtuous. So she gets a sort of rebirth away from this slander and gossip that could have ruined her whole reputation, which is really important. And so he's really excited because he's going to get to marry Hiro, which is his love. And then Benedict, complete change of character, having fallen in love with Beatrice, asks Beatrice, hey, it's true that you love me, right? And she's like, what? No, I don't love you. And he's like, what? But they all said you did. And she's like, well, they told me that you loved me. And he's like, what? I would never. And then it's revealed that each of them has been writing love letters to the other. They haven't delivered, but Claudio had one, I think, for Benedict, and Hiro has one from Beatrice, and they hand it to the other person, and they read, and they say, our own hand against our mouths or something. And they're saying, like, oh, I guess we can't really deny a letter we wrote ourselves that we love each other. And so they end up getting married, and everyone lives happily ever after, except Don John. The end.
Yay! So our guest this week We've got a really great one. We've got Benedict here, guys.
What up, Benedict the married man?
Ha ha ha, what's up?
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much teasing did you get once you got married?
Maybe like 1,000.
Nice. My first question, I think, that I want to ask, I've seen this play once before, and then when I was reading it with you, that was my first time just reading the play. And I feel like in the ether of, like, the Shakespeare world, it's like, oh, Benedict and Beatrice, like, they always love each other the whole play, and, like, they're just, like, angry flirting with each other, whatever. But then, like, when I was reading it, I feel like, is that true? Or did they just get duped and, like, do you know, like, okay. You know what I'm asking?
I do.
Do you feel like they really did love each other the whole time? Or did you get tricked and now, like, when did you fall in love with Beatrice?
Okay. I have always had a thing for her. Mm. Because she's the only woman who has ever been able to keep up with my wit.
Mm.
Other women look at me like immature, which is false. And she jokes at my immaturity while also being very immature in her jokes. So it's just kind of like she's fun to play with, but at the same time, like, for the longest time, I enjoyed the single life. And, I mean, we had a previous kind of history of flirting. Prior to returning to Messina, we previously had a few dates, and it started to get more serious than I would have liked.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I was leaving soon, and so I was like, what's the point? I might be dead. I might not make it back. And I also, you know, wanted to go out with my guys.
Okay.
So, I mean, this had enough time to get too serious. So I broke it off with her, and of course, she was devastated.
Devastated?
What?
Beatrice might say a little differently, but go on.
Well, she's not here.
You're right.
We'll have to have Benedict.
Benedict?
That's their couple name.
No, you know what our couple name is? Be a dick.
Oh my god!
So yeah, she got very pissed when there wasn't much to break off, but from her perspective, there was a lot to break off, I guess.
See. Mm-hmm. She had a lot of hopes.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, I'm not that kind of guy right now. So I knew coming back, like, I know her, she's got a temper, and she's quick with her tongue, so I knew that it would be fun, but I also thought that we'd kind of, like, fall back into it and be easy, but then when I first got there, she was, like, an actual meanie to me. And then I disguised myself at a party, trying to, like, flirt with her, and, like, you know, build myself back up in her favor, and then she, like, told me I was, like, the prince's jester, and that I was a clown, and that no one took me seriously, so...
Well, did you bring her a drink? It's like, girls love that.
No,
see? Rookie move.
Whatever. There was plenty of time left in the night for drinks.
Just saying. Always bring something to a party.
Always bring a banana to a party.
Always bring a banana to a party!
I don't know what you're referencing.
I don't understand that reference.
I understood that reference. No. So I think you kind of answered my question then. You guys did have a history. You were maybe a little bit in love and then, you know, went through a bad breakup period. Like, were you on a break? Were you not on a break?
There was a clean break. There was no question that it was a break.
Oh, okay.
So, because I guess when this occurred to me is when it's revealed, you know, that they've been writing love letters to each other. Because when I was first reading the play, I was like, I just think maybe they just don't like each other. And why are you guys trying to, like, meddle with them so much? And then when it's like, no, they've been writing love letters to each other, I'm like, okay, maybe I'll get on board with this.
To be fair, I didn't start writing the letters until I found out that she was in love with me.
Right, and that's why I feel like it's a pretty questionable relationship.
But here's the thing. Is that not how love works in the real world?
Like, somebody comes to you and says, like, hey, I got this friend Tyler, he's, like, super in love with you.
Dude, have you has that never happened to you?
That is, like, fifth grade right there.
I'm sorry. This happens to me all the time. As soon as someone says they like me, it, like, puts them on my radar, and I can be like, oh, wait, maybe.
No, sometimes you're right. Happens. Yeah. No. I mean, it's, like, really starts in, like, fourth and fifth grade, but it's something that you do take into adulthood.
No, or, like, no. Have you ever just been, like, looked at someone differently, and you're like, oh, I think you like me, and then you're like, huh, kind of like you too.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I personally, Beatrice won't let me have it, but I think it'd be fun to play Tinder. But it's like Tinder. It's like, you swipe to get a like, and then you get a like, and you're like, could I be into this person? I talk as if I've done this. I haven't. Don't tell Beatrice. It's a game.
It literally says, do you want to keep playing?
Exactly. I never message. It's just, I get a like, and I'm like, I hope I bump into
I really
the
hope
street
Beatrice doesn't hear this.
And get their eyes. She probably won't. She doesn't like technology, so.
All right, there you go. She'll be fine.
To answer your question, no. This has never been a situation in my life.
This has been a situation in my life. It's why I wait a really long time before I tell people I'm dating someone, so I don't get my views poisoned by other people's opinions. They say, like, you know, like, he's great for you. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, he is great for me. Instead, I can just, like, sit back and chill with it.
Right.
But I'm a weirdo.
I just want to go into a little bit
yes.
the question that I asked while we were reading so you can explain it some more and also to our lovely listeners, which is, why does Don John cook up this plot? He's just like, let me pretend that this Lenny's not a virgin so I can just cause all this trouble and run out of town. What? That's all his motivation?
That's all the motivation we're given as far as the play. We don't know what his relationship is to his brother or if there was some sort of like favoritism among their parents, things like that. But he like had some sort of revolution against his brother and was squashed. He lost this war so badly. In the first scene, it says, oh no, it was a great war. We didn't lose that many on our side, which means the prince didn't even have to get rid of that many soldiers. Like, he creamed his brother's revolution. There was no chance of it working. And so to come in shackles and then have to play nice with the person you were trying to rise up against, all he wants to do is rebel.
I have another little thought just from observing.
Yeah, you were closer to this than any of us.
I personally think that Don John is masking his love for Conrad.
Oh, that took a turn. Speak more on this.
I fully support it. I think you do you. And I hate that they feel like, I say it as if I know for sure. I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
But there's definitely something between the two of them where they're just like always super close. And I've never seen either of them try and flirt with a woman or anything like that. And so I think it's another thing that makes Don John feel
inadequate
and far away from everyone else.
Outsider.
Yeah. Makes him more of an outsider.
Did you ever hear them say anything to each other that really helped put this thought into your mind, or just kind of in the way that you observe them together?
It's just in the way I observe them.
They're often alone together.
Mm.
And they get interrupted more so than anything else. Like he says, like, who's here?
Oh, okay.
I just get the vibe.
That's very interesting. Have you ever observed a telling of your story that has played on this relationship, either of you?
Well, the super talented Joss Whedon, who put together a movie of the story of how we came to fall in love, it's weird that he cast Conrad as a female. And Conrad and Don John were in a relationship.
Yeah.
There's a very heated scene he put in there between the two of them.
That really works, in my opinion.
It does really work.
Okay. I'll have to check that out. I'm always down because you may have heard Benedict, but for those of us in the acting world, you're often told there are very few extremely strong motivations within a scene to get, or like a reason to do something. It's like self-preservation, money from the other person, or sex from the other person. That does definitely fulfill one of those objectives and makes that, okay. But still, even if you're in love with your buddy, just like leave town. Don't ruin everyone else's life, Don John. What's your problem?
Well, misery loves company.
Aww.
You know that all too well.
Anyway.
One thing that comes up a lot that I love in this play is love as a sickness.
Mm.
Beatrice literally gets ill when she falls in love. She's like, oh, yeah. Cousin, I'm real sorry. I gotta take a seat. I'm like coughing. I don't know what's happening. They're like, are you in love? She's like, no. But she clearly is. Comments? Thoughts?
I just have to say, nothing has changed in 500 years or 400 years or all of time and space, because you're going to have to edit down this rant and this tangent.
Oh,
but
Jesus.
You and I were just talking, I think after we finished Much Ado, about crushes, and you were like, I love having crushes, it makes me so happy. And I said, it's literally the worst thing in the world, because for me, and I do not get that many crushes. I think I've had 5, and I'm 24. So, like, do the math on that. I was homeschooled, helps explain my life slightly.
Yeah.
Slightly.
A lot. What?
Anyway, it's not that I get a cold or I get actually ill or sick, but I do think it diverts your energy in such a weird way. And I've got so many other things that I could be doing, but then all my energy is like, well, I just wish that they knew what I was doing right now. And I wish I could share this with them and get their opinion on it. And it's like, ah, no, get out of my head. I don't want this. Anyway.
For me, it's so funny because for me, it's just such a useful tool for my life. As silly as that sounds. But, and also I didn't get crushes till later in life than most people as well. And so whenever I do feel that with someone, I'm like, yeah, I don't need to do anything about this, really. I'm just excited it's happening for me again. And I just tap into that when I'm, like, just chilling. Or if I'm really pissed off or sad or something, I'm just like, but remember, humankind has this thing called love, and your body's trying to get you into that. Isn't that crazy?
I like that. I see what you mean. It does sometimes
delights me.
Reassure me that I'm a normal person.
Human. Humanity, man. That's why we love Shakespeare. He's all about humanity.
Yes.
Thoughts, Benedict? You have been a professor of the torture of love as well as the frivolity.
I think that I had sworn it off so much in my life that, like, I forgot what it could feel like to, like, have those butterflies and have not just someone to be my wife, but someone to, like, match me. Who can, like, bring the fun into a relationship. Whereas I see a lot of people just get married to get married, and then they get bored.
Right.
And it's like, I never got that feeling.
Right.
I think this play is actually fairly, it's like Midsummer. I think this play is actually pretty easy to understand, though there are still people that are dressing up as other people. The thing is, because you bring up this point a lot, it's always better to see Shakespeare performed than read it.
Yeah.
And I think one of the issues, because when I read Twelfth Night on my own, so I'm just reading it inside my head, it doesn't seem that funny. You don't really get it. And I think that's because unless you see it performed with costumes or you're reading it out loud and people are kind of there to give Viola a different voice when she's pretending to be a man, you kind of forget that, and it all, because you're reading Viola says this, and it doesn't quite work.
Right.
So I think that's why it seems like it's a lot. And even here, we see it again with a couple people.
Yeah, I think this play in particular is good for that too. Also because people are saying things but meaning another thing when they're trying to mislead Beatrice and Benedict. So when they're saying, like, oh yeah, Beatrice is, like, so upset because she's so in love with Benedict, they're really saying, oh yeah, Beatrice is so upset because she's so in love with Benedict. Because they're doing it all for Benedict's,
right,
like, what's the word?
Benefit.
Benefit. Benedict's benefit. Ooh. The new shrimp place on Melrose.
I was gonna say brunch because breakfast at Benedict's Benefits is great.
Yeah. Endless mimosas and eggs Benedicts.
Oh my gosh. Having eggs named after you is so cool.
So, modern adaptations. There are some great ones for this.
Awesome.
We talked a little bit about Joss Whedon's Much Ado About Nothing, which he filmed on his break from filming the Avengers movies at his house. It's a great story. Look into it if you have the chance.
Sounds like he and I have the same problem.
No location and no. A lot of friends.
Well, that, for one, no, like, oh my god, what do you mean I have a day off? What am I supposed to do with myself?
Oh, fair.
I better just go film a movie.
Real quick. Another version that of the movies I've seen that aren't videos of plays, my favorite Shakespeare movie is Kenneth Branagh's Much Ado About Nothing, starring him and Emma Thompson.
Nice.
It's got like an all-star cast. Denzel Washington's in it. Keanu Reeves is in it.
I'm in love with Emma Thompson.
Bruh.
Duh.
Bruh.
Who's not in love
Professor
with Emma Thompson?
Professor Trelawney? She is, right?
Do you want to re-say that
name? I don't know how to say it!
Trelawney?
Oh,
yeah, that one!
Wow, I'm not even from this century and I know that.
Is the version with Emma Thompson, does that bring it into modern days? Or are there versions that do... I mean, I know Joss Whedon's updates it to modern day, but are there other versions that bring it?
Well, the thing about this play is it's so real. And also, it's pretty outside of society. It's all taking place in this house.
Mm.
So you pretty much don't need it to be, quote-unquote, Shakespeare times. Mm. But the only issue that does come up is the plot. Because the main plot is that hero being a whore is the worst thing that could possibly happen. And now, in our day and age, if a girl has sex before she gets married, it's not that big a deal anymore. It's not, you can't do literally anything in society anymore. That's not the case.
It's not something that would make you die of shame.
Yeah, you would not die of shame. That's like the only thing that gets like weird. So most productions that I see do have it set a little bit back in time. Or, like, with some old-timey costumes. Mm. But there's not much more that you need than that.
Yeah.
So the Emma Thompson version, they're wearing, like, flowy dresses. And it's in, like, an Italian countryside kind of thing.
Mm.
So it's not like they're wearing pantsuits. And they are coming from war.
Right.
So it's kind of set in that time. But they're not wearing doublets.
Right.
Things like that.
Cool.
Okay. So there's this weird BBC miniseries called Shakespeare Retold.
Mm-hmm.
Where they took Shakespeare plays, took out the verse and the language, and just did the plot, and set it either in some sort of modern time or the same time, and they did Much Ado About Nothing, Midsummer Night's Dream, and Taming of the Shrew.
Mm.
And they all have people you would kind of know, like Moaning Myrtle and Count Adhemar from A Knight's Tale. I'm so sorry, I don't know either of these people's real names. But they play opposite each other in Taming of the Shrew. And it's a great movie. And there's a movie version of Much Ado About Nothing, starring people you'd recognize, like Damian Lewis. Billy Piper plays Hero, if you watch Doctor Who. And they set this in a news studio. And so they're, like, warring news anchors. And they, like, have a concoction to, like, make them fall in love.
Cool.
So that's a good one to check out, especially if you're intimidated by Shakespeare's language. Because it's delightful.
Wonderful. Let's go into technical aspects. So what are we talking about this week, Beverly?
This week, we're talking about antithesis.
Mmm.
So this is something Shakespeare likes to use a lot. It's just a literary term, really. It's not specific to Shakespeare. He just employs it a lot. So antithesis just means when you have two juxtaposing ideas really close to each other. And Shakespeare often uses this as imagery. It's a really great way to get a point across when you're feeling very impassioned about something, as well as just trying to paint a picture.
Using opposites to make a point.
Yeah. When you see Shakespeare performed really well, the actors will oftentimes find those and really play them, as well as hit exactly where they counteract with each other. Like this part, or this part. There's a bunch in this play because Beatrice and Benedict, their whole back and forth revolves around them hating and loving each other. But even when Claudio is dealing with what he thinks is Hero's betrayal, he says in Act 4, Scene 1, "But fare thee well, most foul, most fair. Foul well, thou pure impiety and impious purity." And then later, Beatrice to Benedict, literally the first time they see each other in a long time, Act 1, Scene 1, she says, "A bird of my tongue is better than a beast of yours."
I remember that.
She also talks about him when she's talking to, we found out, you at the party.
Yep.
In disguise. She's talking about Benedict. She says, "For he both pleases men and angers them, and then they laugh at him and beat him." But there's some great ones in the rest of Shakespeare's play. There's a great turn of phrase by Touchstone, another clown, in As You Like It, where he says, "A fool thinks himself to be wise, but a wise man knows himself to be a fool."
That's a very famous quote. Mm. Look at you go, Shakespeare.
You go, Shakespeare. You go. Two for you.
I think the other point to bring up about antithesis, when performing Shakespeare, I think looking and knowing what the different antitheses are is important because it also will help you find in things that aren't in meter where the emphasis should fall.
Yeah, totally.
Because you're contrasting the two ideas. Because there are often so many words in Shakespeare and so many things that you need to get out. If you're able to figure out what he's contrasting within a line or within a monologue, then you're able to really pull out what word you should be hitting. And that is why and how you perform Shakespeare well.
Wow. Gold star for Allison. 100% real. Genuinely earned it. Yeah, you do that victory dance. Keep doing that dance. It's a great dance, you guys. On a scale of 10, I'd give it a 6. Benedict, you'd agree, right?
I learned to not judge anything a woman does now.
Is that the end of that sentence?
Yes.
You've learned a lot from this time in your life.
Okay. Benedict, I would be so honored if you would read a scene with me. I could be your Beatrice for a moment. We don't have to tell her, obviously.
She's not going
to
listen, right?
She's not going to listen.
Let's do it.
So Allison and Benedict are going to read a little bit of Act 5, Scene 2. This is a scene after Benedict has challenged Claudio to a duel, but nothing has happened yet. Hero is still wronged. But we have this cute little moment between Benedict and Beatrice, where they're talking about how they first came to fall in love with each other. Take it away, guys.
"Sweet Beatrice, wouldst thou come when I call thee?"
"Yea, senor, and depart when you bid me."
"Oh, stay but till then."
"Then is spoken. Fare you well now. And ere I go, let me go with that I came, which is knowing what hath passed between you and Claudio."
"Only foul words, and thereupon I will kiss thee."
"Foul words is but foul wind, and foul wind is but foul breath is noisome. Therefore I will depart unkissed."
"Thou hast frighted the word out of his right sense. So forcible is thy wit, but I must tell thee plainly. Claudio undergoes my challenge, and either I must shortly hear from him, or I will subscribe him a coward. And I pray thee now, tell me, for which of my bad parts didst thou first fall in love with me?"
"For them all together. Which maintain so politic a state of evil that they will not admit any good part to intermingle with them. But for which of my good parts did you first suffer love for me?"
"Suffer love? A good epithet. I do suffer love indeed, for I love thee against my will."
"In spite of your heart, I think. Alas, poor heart. If you spite it for my sake, I will spite it for yours. For I will never love that which my friend hates."
"Thou and I are too wise to woo peaceably."
Scene. What a great story of tough love and sparring flirtations.
Woohoo!
All right. Thank you for joining us
on Shaky Understanding. I'm Allison.
And I'm Beverly.
Deuces, peasants! Deuces, peasants!
one more time.
I almost said, peace out, bitches.
I wish you had.
I don't know why I wanted that to come out so bad.
Benedict took over from the penis up. He was like, say it.
Oh, man.